Welcome to another episode of Ohio Mystery Backroads. We're your hosts, Mike and Dan. And in this podcast, we'll explore lesser-known stories, legends, people, and places of the Buckeye State. So buckle in, here we go. And welcome to part two of Ohio Mysteries Backroads episode on Hell's Half Acre. The State Line Bar would close permanently in 1952. Jenny was getting old, her husband had passed, and there was nobody there to hand off their legal operations, so she kind of closed it down. And Jenny was also helpful in the relocation and establishment of the Point of Beginning marker back in 1968. Jenny Eckert would become ill in 1979, and she passed away on November 4th, 1980, at age 90. Her survivors included her ailing son, John Miles, a sister, five grandchildren, nine great-grandchildren, and four great-great-grandchildren. Her house would fall into disrepair, and in early 1984, the house was destroyed by a series of fires of suspicious causes.
Sounds like arson.
However, Jenny's death did not end the controversy and dispute which had long marked her life and her neighborhood. Filing of the will for probate soon brought a series of challenges to its terms, and this debate would continue well into 1995. So can you imagine? Years this is dragging on. Her estate was valued at $78,700, of which $75,000 was in real estate, $3,600 was in rentals, and $100 was in personal property. However, not listed were the banked funds, which the court later listed as some $280,000 in deposits, plus $53,000, 565 U.S. saving bonds, all of which were Jenny's or they were shared with others. These included $20,000 in the Potter's Bank and Trust discovered by the bank on August 6, 1982.
So she sounds like a real Robin Hood character.
You know, she really does. And kind of in researching the story, I did visit East Liverpool and I stopped at an antique store and spoke with a few people there. And almost to a person, all of them knew of her and spoke of her in really glowing terms.
Wow.
Yeah, so this brings us up to the last part of our story. And then we're going to talk about the guy that we had mentioned before, Joe Miller. There were two brothers, and this is the story of these two brothers, Joe and Billy. So we're going to talk about Willis, Billy Miller, who was originally from Ironton, and he shot his brother to death. He shot Joseph Alabama Joe Miller over a woman in the autumn of 1925, which was a short distance into Pennsylvania from Hell's Half Acre. The slaying would earn Willis the nickname Billy the Killer throughout the Midwest. Jake Eckert, going back to, he was the owner of the State Line Tavern and husband of Jenny Eckert, and he was a witness to this slaying. So Billy Miller was 22, and he was living in Midland when he and his brother Joe, 29, known as the King of the State Line Bootleggers, they became infatuated with the same woman, and this was Mrs. Hazel Campbell Anthony.
Well, so he was married.
Who was also married.
Okay.
Well, jealousy turned to bloodshed, and on September 18th, Jake Eckert met Billy and Lewis Campbell of Michigan Avenue. So Lewis Campbell, that's her brother. So here we go. So Jake Eckert, owner of the State Line Tavern, met Billy the Killer and Lewis Campbell, the brother of the woman who they were infatuated with, and they all met at the State Line on that evening. Billy asked Jake if he had seen his girlfriend, Mrs. Campbell. Jake replied that Joe Miller and Mrs. Anthony were near a spring up the hill 200 yards east of the Ohio line, so not far from the bar where everybody was. Billy and Campbell began walking up an abandoned Island Run streetcar track line while Eckert headed down toward the spring on a shortcut, and he arrived before the other two. So Jake said that after he joined Joe and the woman, soon they spotted Billy and Campbell coming up the path. Joe started down to meet his brother, Jake said, and when he was within a few feet, Billy pulled out a revolver and without a word began firing at his brother.
So he shot his own brother then, like you said.
Yes, he gunned down his own brother. The bullet hit Joe in the chest and it passed through his body. Eckert said he jumped behind a tree to avoid being struck by a stray bullet and did not see what had followed. However, police reported that Joe was apparently beaten severely about the head with the handle of the revolver after he fell and rolled into the weeds along the path. So not only did this guy get shot, he got beat up by the gun by his own brother.
Wow.
So.
A little bit of a passionate crime there, huh?
Yes. Eckert would go on to say that he saw Mrs. Anthony run to Billy and throw her arms around his neck. Then they walked down the path toward the streetcar tracks. Billy warned Jake to stay where he was, behind the tree. Soon, city officers were alerted around 7 p.m., and they found the body on the path. It was dragged there by William Llewellyn, an operator of a state line refreshment stand who probably heard the shot and went up to see what was going on. The city police, along with Pennsylvania law officers, combed the area seeking for suspects. Billy, Mrs. Anthony, and Campbell reportedly went to Campbell's home after the shooting and then disappeared. The Miller brothers, according to the police, had arrived in the area about 3 years prior and were blamed for a number of the offenses linked with Hell's Half Acre. Joe had been released from the Allegheny County, Pennsylvania workhouse a month before, where he was serving a year on liquor charges in Beaver County, for which he had been fined $1,000.
That was a lot of money then, too.
A huge amount of money. And Joe had been sought for several months on that offense, making several sensational escapes before he was captured. He had been living at the state line since he was freed from the workhouse. Joe's younger brother, William, had earned a bad reputation as a youth around Ireton, Ohio. Billy had returned to the state line area that spring after serving 6 months in the Allegheny workhouse on a liquor charge. He reportedly had resumed his bootlegging enterprises and a city illegal liquor charge was filed against him. On June 1925, City Patrolman Herman Roth and Chester Smith went to the state line looking for Billy, finally locating him on the Ohio side. When Roth told him he was under arrest, Miller bolted. Roth would fire at him, and the bullet hit him in the leg where he would surrender. Billy was admitted to City Hospital, where 8 days later he would escape, apparently with the help of outsiders, one being a woman. He climbed down from a second-story window using sheets tied together to form a rope. Police said he was taken to Newcastle, where he had recovered from his wound, and further went on to Midland, where he got a job in the mill and took up residence. Just a few days before the shooting, Billy indicated that he wanted to go straight and had almost completed a deal with the city police to turn himself in and pay his fine in installments. Billy Miller later was tried in Beaver County for first-degree murder in connection with his brother's death. He claimed he fired his weapon only after Joe attacked him, and the jury stunningly returned a not guilty verdict.
So it was self-defense is what he was claiming.
That's what he's claiming, but...
So he got away with it, okay?
He got away with it. So he gets away with it. He did, although I couldn't really find a transcript or any other details on the trial, only that he was found not guilty. However, the trial judge ordered him held under an old English law requiring him to post $2,000 as a guarantee for future good conduct. He was unable to raise the money and he spent a year in jail until the bond was reduced to $500. It was posted by his mother who, it was said, mortgaged her home in Ironton. Billy would eventually drift to other parts of Ohio engaged in illegal activities. And 6 years later, he met up with Pretty Boy Floyd after the latter had escaped from a train taking him to the Ohio penitentiary. In Kansas City, the two became involved with two married women whose husbands were soon found murdered along a country road. The slim, dapper Miller, a bigamist with two wives, became known to police throughout the Midwest as the torpedo of various Ohio gangs who had already killed five men. After being arrested 28 times, Miller boasted he would not be taken alive. And Pretty Boy Floyd was a pal of Scioto County's public enemy number one, William Miller, known nationally as Billy the Killer. It seems that Floyd and Miller often stopped at Miller's home waiting for the trail of officers to cool down. They brushed now and then with local officers, but for the most part managed to escape, sometimes in gun battles. The last reported trip together to Green Township was during the week preceding Miller's death at the hands of police at Bowling Green in 1930. The pair had robbed a bank in Kentucky and returned to Miller's home. On April 16th, they were confronted by Bowling Green authorities and a shootout occurred. Floyd attempted to come to Miller's aid, killing patrolman Ralph Kastner, but Miller was already dead by the time the battle had ended. His life of crime ended as he had boasted. He was not taken alive. While Floyd was able to escape back to Oklahoma, Rose Ash and Beulah Baird, the latter being wounded during the gunfight, were both arrested and charged with harboring fugitives. The body of Billy the Killer was removed from the scene of the shootout and taken to Deck Funeral Home in Bowling Green, where it was reported throughout the night and following day, police kept close watch as public enemies lined up to pay their last respects. Among the most notorious visitors waiting to pay their respects was none other than Ma Barker and her gang. Two women, both professing to be the wife of Billy Miller, tried to claim the body, but only one could produce a marriage license. Billy then was transported back to Ironton, Ohio, where he was buried beside his father and brother, both of whom had also been shot to death.
Wow, so Billy sort of made it to the big time.
Yeah, he did. So he was known nationally after he killed his brother, and then he links up with Pretty Boy Floyd, and he's well on his way. And he did have a lot of notoriety, and he was probably the most famous of all the Hell's Half Acre crowd owing to his partner in crime.
It sounds like a gravesite I should go visit and probably do a story on this guy. Whatever happened to Hell's Half Acre?
Well, glad you asked. The infamous State Line Bar was closed in 1952. When Prohibition had ended in 1933, this eliminated a lot of the problems surrounding illegal liquor and the problems that came with it. Jenny Eckert did continue to sell booze out of her home, and there were rumors of other activities, just not on the scale that it once was. Eventually, the police squeezed the criminal element until the area was free from the vices that had defined it earlier. Today, almost none of the structures remain, and there are no signs that at one time this place was the most crime-infested area in all of Ohio.
Yeah, I mean, so much went on there. All these different stories, all these different people. What a great story. It's amazing.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to hear more like it, head over to OhioMysteries.com. With over 500 podcasts to choose from, there's sure to be one that's going to keep you captivated. I'm Dan, and I can be found at YouTube at North Coast History and Haunts. My partner Mike can be found at Facebook at Too Late for Autographs.
A news story gets shared by a friend on social media, or you catch a tweet that really makes your blood boil. But how do you separate fact from fiction? That's the premise behind Disinformation, a 10-part series from Evergreen Podcasts and Emergent Risk International coming this fall. Tune into Disinformation wherever you get your podcasts, and remember, don't believe everything you read.